I don't normally wear watches, but I got one recently. And on it is the face of one of my favorite philosophers, Friedrich Nietzsche, which is a strange favorite philosopher for a Christian priest, but I find that Nietzsche keeps me on my toes. It's got him with his customary large mustache. The second hand, though, is what's really fascinating. Around and around, it goes the eternal return of the same. Now, if you don't know anything about Nietzsche, Nietzsche studied to be a Lutheran pastor, was the son of a Lutheran pastor, and went off to seminary, and while he was in seminary, realized he was essentially an atheist, and so he became a philosopher. He's one of the masters of suspicion, along with Karl Marx and Kant, who drove a wedge into sort of the religious stranglehold of the philosophical imagination. That's one way to put it. But central to his ideology was this idea that history is a constant cycle of repetition, that things in the past will return and it's always going to be that. And our job as people is to learn how to live most fully and most honestly in the midst of this cycle of repetition. Now, at this point, I'm willing to wager that most of you are wondering just what Friedrich Nietzsche and this silly watch have to do with this particular feast day. We're living, it seems, in a regressive time in our world, where things that we thought were gone are returning. So maybe Nietzsche was right, the eternal return of the same. We have policies that are dehumanizing people. We have behaviors that are bringing us down as a people, that are devolving us, so to speak. Probably the truth is these things never really left. They just wore different kind of masks. And yet we're seeing the return of ugliness and hatred and division and open racism and aggression. The very things our hymn prayed for the end of. The eternal return of the same. It's all coming back. It's moments like these when I wish for the return of Sojourner Truth and Harriet Tubman. Last All Saints Day, I preached about three different saints that I have found inspiration in studying their lives and sitting at their feet across time and space. And Sojourner Truth was one of them. If you don't know anything about Sojourner Truth, what a fascinating and powerful and feisty woman. In the biography, there's mention of her speech, "Ain't I a Woman?" But I encourage and commend the entirety of it to you. It's a tour de force of a woman who was denied membership at St. George's Episcopal Church in Philadelphia, which I think is our loss as a church, who, after listening to clergy, primarily white men clergy, well, it only would have been white men clergy at that time, right, speaking about the necessary subjugation of women and especially the necessary subjugation of black women, stood up and delivered this speech that blew the doors off the place. She takes the story of Mary giving birth to Jesus to talk about the strength of women, particularly the strength of marginalized women, to say, "Ain't I a woman like Mary?" It's incredible. I mean, the rhetoric, the skill, the power. Who knows how many hearts were changed in that moment, but God, I wish Sojourner Truth was here today. I think people like Sojourner Truth and Harriet Tubman and the other two, which I'm going to be honest, I don't find as fascinating of lives. And although I do think they deserve more than a cluster of one feast day for all four, their lives are so rich. Still says something about how we deal with saints, right? They were responding to this deep call of the gospel, which is the call of Jesus Christ to liberate, to set free, to preach, to to heal, to exorcise demons, whether or not they're metaphysical realities or not, but to have this spirit of exorcism, to call evil what's evil, to lift up the good. It's the call of the gospel from Jesus. And then it comes, right, from the mouths of prophets, whether they be old prophets like Amos or Micah, or new prophets like Sojourner or Harriet, who heard the call of the gospel coming from Jesus and realized that they had to respond. They had to be persistent, as this gospel points us to. They had to attend to wisdom, as our lesson spoke to us, listening for the voice to then go out into the world and respond. That's what's needed in a world that seems to be returning to the same over and over again. I love that, at least in the Gospel of Luke, Jesus' first sermon is this moment of breaking down the walls of what's expected of a rabbi and thus a Messiah, of setting the stakes really high right from the get-go. I've come to set people free. I've come to set people out of captivity. I've come to give sight to the blind and to liberate the oppressed. And guess what? Today, it's fulfilled in your hearing. And that call is responded to by people throughout history who then issue that call to us. Well, maybe if we're not going to take Jesus seriously enough, we might take people like Sojourner and Harriet seriously. But have we? Are we honoring the legacy of these brave people who spoke truth to power? I picked the cover art because I love this image of, you know, truth prevailing, coming from the mouth of Sojourner Truth. When I preached about her last November, I had another painting that had one of her other quotes: "Religion without humanity is very poor stuff indeed." I didn't, you know, for the three or four people who were here last November, but I didn't want to do a greatest hits tour, so I picked this one. But truth comes to us as a call that impinges upon us, that comes against us, that sometimes is an antagonizer against our comfort, that challenges us, that calls us to stretch our imaginations of what's possible and what is impossible in this world. Truth will prevail. Truth requires people of courage to be willing to birth it anew in a world that seems to be sated upon lies and vengeance. And that birth is painful. It comes at a cost. We've seen that play out in the way voices for truth have been silenced in our day, in our time. Not in a past history that we can sanitize. The call of the truth sometimes calls us to lay down our lives for what we believe in, to put our bodies on the lines. I was convicted recently. I went to the Lights for Liberty rally in Santa Fe last Friday. And there was a person who was talking about what can people in power do to resist some of the egregious injustices that are being done to minority peoples. And the one that got me was that a person who looks like me can be willing to put my body on the line for other people. Not just my money at a distance, not just my prayers and my thoughts, but to be willing to put my body on the line for the vulnerable. That's what Harriet Tubman did. Put her body on the line over and over again to set her brothers and sisters free. The call of truth comes to us, and it requires that with courage we be willing to birth it anew, even if it's painful. So, I mean, what does any of this have to do with you, right? That's the question. That's the homiletical question. How can you make your sermon relevant to your audience? Well, I don't know, because I don't know what your everyday life is like. Some of you I know very well. Some of you I don't. I think in general, for a feast day like this and with scriptures like this and hymns like this, we have a choice to make. Are we going to live in response to the call of God, the call of truth, its persistence? Or are we going to plug our ears up and pretend as if the eternal return of the same is all well and good? When I hear this scripture, it's easy for us to imagine ourselves being the ones who are persistent. But what if we're the ones in need of that persistent knock? What if we are the ones who are listening for the plea, the ones who need to have this call ushered to us and given to us time and time again so that we are finally moved to respond? As a theologian, philosopher turned theologian who I like, named John Caputo, who said, "The name of God is the name of the chance for something absolutely new, for a new birth, for the expectation, the hope against hope in a transforming future. Without it, we are left without hope and are absorbed by rational management techniques." So we're here to talk about the budget, which, if you know anything about its creation, has sometimes felt like one of those rational management techniques, because it requires a lot of talking and a lot of compromise and a lot of listening. And that's all well and good. But my call to you, as the people gathered as the Northeast Deanery, not just as the dean, but as a member of diocesan council who had a hand in creating that budget, is for you to push back. For you to listen for the call of God in this meeting and in this moment, and discern whether or not this budget is going to lead us into a time of fullness and hospitality and bold truth-telling. That's your job. Whether people like me who had a hand in this or not like it, that is your job to push back and to say, we can be more just with this document, if indeed that is how you feel. We can be more truthful. We can be more holy and righteous. And I would hope that that's what all who have had a hand in this budget process would desire. But living in response to the call has to be about more than just a budget, right? Because then again, it's just another rational management technique. We're a diocese and we need a budget. What are you going to do going from this place? From this place where our central ritual is remembering, literally re-piecing together the broken body of one who laid down his life in response to the call of God and the call of the truth. How differently are you going to live? That's for you to decide. But I hope that in some way you are comforted by the fact that this call comes from God and not primarily from you. But I hope you're disturbed by the fact that this call seems to be going unheard. And I hope you're energized by the fact that people have done this before us and lived so fully and faithfully, these four women, that it's possible to live that way again. Listen for truth. Listen for the gospel. Be willing to spend yourself for it, regardless of the return. And in that way, maybe we can prove Nietzsche wrong.